Forum, it's March 16th. The Ides of March are passed. Would you call the roll, please?
Justin Coleman.
Here.
Justin Simmons. Justin Stumble. Justin Calvito.
Here.
Justin Seaton.
Here.
Justin Vasquez. Chair Keller.
Here. And I expect that we'll be getting more members as we go along. Today on the agenda, we have three bills, and we're going to start right off with SCR 1. All three bills have been heard in committee before, so we'll have a new CS for every one of them to adopt before we can start. So if you'd move that CS as a working document, I would appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the committee substitute for House Bill number 102, Education.
I'm sorry. SCR. Did I give you the wrong one?
No, you gave me the right one.
No.
I read the wrong one. I'm sorry. I'd rescind that and move the House committee substitute for SCR 1, number 29, LS0237 /I to be our working document for consideration.
Super. I see no objection. So that's our working document. We have the sponsor's representative here, so if you would give us an overview of what changes are in the CS, and hopefully we can move ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. The CS before you reflects some changes as a result of some comments that were brought up at the last hearing. For starters, and again, we're looking at version I here on page 1, lines 8 and 9, we've added language that would read, based on an understanding of the values of the nation's founders as revealed in the nation's founding documents. That was at the request of the chair to specifically reference the U.S. founding documents. The second change was on page 2, line 1 and 2. Following the word help, we've changed it to encourage schools to. It was just a grammar change, and in line 2, in a manner that complements. And this was as a result of Representative Seaton's request to clarify that the task force would not be adopting new standards, state standards for civic education. Third change was on page 2, lines 14 through 20. We added two missions or tasks of the task force, one being to evaluate the merits of and implementation requirements for requiring a high school seniors to take the civics portion of the naturalization test for U.S. citizenship as a contingency for graduating from high school. That's subsection 5 there. Number 6, then, also to review the merits and consider ways to best implement the ESA as it pertains to civics education. And both of those new sections were added, firstly, to incorporate the idea behind House Bill 89 that's been sponsored by the chairman. And also, it was pointed out to us by the chairman's staff earlier that there's some very interesting and new components of ESA that specifically target civics education, so we wanted to include that, and it's something that the task force would look at. And then finally, actually not finally, but fourth is on page 3, line 8 and 9, we struck reference to explicit reference to the National Education Association and replaced that with there being just a member of the task force that served as represents them being a current or retired high school teacher that had extensive experience in civics or social studies in the state. We wanted to specify it was in the state. Again, that was at the request of the chair. And then finally, of course, we changed the dates to reflect our current year to be 2017, that they would report back at that time. That concludes the changes to the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Does the committee have any questions on the clarifications or Representative Culver?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have in our packet some proposed amendments, and the sponsor in the CS has incorporated, as far as I can tell, what we have listed as amendment, proposed amendment 1 and proposed amendment 2. Is there any others? We had 4 in our packet, just for clarification.
Mass, the sponsor, as I understand it, as I recall it, we have them all incorporated into CS with the addition of the examining the merits of ESSA. But that's the way I see it. Is that a fair?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Although, for the record, I'm not aware of any other amendments, but it sounds like we've already rolled them into the CS.
Right.
Yeah, just for the record, Mr. Chairman, we have page 2, line 11, referring to ESSA. We had the qualifications of an educator background, change that language. We had inserted reference to U.S. founding documents and Representative Seaton's recommendation on encouraging schools on page 2, line 1. So, yeah, just to be clear, that so the record's clear. Thank you.
Thank you for that confirmation. We're all aware, in addition, the date changed to 2017. We have no testifiers other than the sponsors. If you would just stay there, but we're going to open it up to the comments of the committee. Comments or questions or debate or whatever. I'll jump right in and take opportunity to say that I'm gratified for the change that you made on page 1 that I requested, which is that civics knowledge must be based on an understanding of the values of the nation's founders as revealed in the nation's founding documents, including knowledge of our system of government. I thank you for that, and I see it as important, and the reason I'm pointing it out is not to shine my halo, it's to make and the outside chance that somebody on the task force goes back and looks at the minutes and listens to them, that I kind of underline it, you know, and just emphasize that, because I suspect somebody on this committee could likely be appointed to that task force, and I just don't want it to get lost in the weeds, but thank you. Any other comments? Representative Culver.
Yeah, I just have struggled a little bit with the fiscal note. I guess my question through the chair to the sponsor is, do we have any civic groups or nonprofits or other educational entities that might be willing to cover the costs of the commission or the task force?
Through the chair, Representative Culver, as you'll see in the narrative of the fiscal note, we very carefully structured this fiscal note to be very frugal. Any members appointed to the task force, if they represent or are part of some particular agency, we ask that they contribute their own respective funds to accommodate any travel costs associated with participating in the task force. So I can't speak to any specific organization right now, of course, because we don't know who's going to be on the task force. But if or when we do appoint them, we would ask that they contribute their respective funds, the costs associated with being on the task force.
Representative Culver, are you referring to the zero fiscal note?
Well, that we maybe have? I'm not updated to the latest and greatest, Mr. Chairman. Let's see.
It's not zero. It's 5.9.
Yeah, that's a good issue to get sorted out, isn't it?
Right.
Okay, so you have a new fiscal note.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, the last session when it passed the Senate, the other bodies, the Finance Committee, zeroed out the fiscal note because this was specifically going to be funds from the Legislative Council. Because we came about to a new session, our accounting department refreshed the fiscal note to its original number with the expectation that it would be zeroed out once again.
Representative Culver, would you like to make a motion to zero out the fiscal note, the new one?
Can we take a brief at ease for parliamentary purposes?
Joined us, Representative Culver.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move to strike any funding in the fiscal note dated 3/16 for the CS, and the motion was to move the bill out with a zero fiscal note. That's the motion.
Okay.
And I can speak to it if you want.
Okay, just for real clarification here, you moved move the bill out of committee then. 29LS0237 India with a zero fiscal note with individual recommendations, and that's with a zero fiscal note.
Okay, the chair has restated the motion, moving House CS for CS concurrent resolution number 129-version29LS0237/1 dated 3/11/16. Move out of committee with zero fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Object for discussion. Was that /I version?
Clarification, is that /I? That's /I. The motion will reflect that has corrected that it's version 29LS0237/I.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
You remove your objection?
I remove my objection.
Seeing no further objection, CR1 passes. Congratulations. Thank you for your work and patience.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really do appreciate what you've done here. I think this will have a real impact on Alaska's youth, and job well done. Thanks.
Okay. We'll take a little at ease here. But we're just trying to figure out some of the technicalities on the dates of the sunset, the dates of the due, when this should start and whatever. So that's what we're trying to do, so make sure we understand it, and we'll make sure it all gets on the record. So it's no, we'll do the business online like we're supposed to, but we're going to take a little of ease till we get the paperwork fixed up. These was that we're just trying to make sure that we don't do something inadvertently. We're all just understanding. There's been a number of versions and concerns that we've been accommodating. There's been other people, of course, a lot of people, hard work and input into this bill. And with the action that we take today won't make everybody happy, but it's a I hope we'll take today. That's up to the committee. I think it's really a good bill. So if you would, Representative Talrico, I would appreciate it if you would move the CS for S for a working document.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the committee substitute for House Bill 102, number 29LS0519/S, to be our working document for consideration.
Mr. Chairman.
Do you object for
discussion of the new, or just an explanation of it?
No. The motion was that we use it as a working document. So if there's questions on the CS, that I'd like to wait and ask on the CS. But are you objecting to us using that as a working document?
As long as we're going to get explanation of the changes from the previous CS to the current one, I'm fine.
That's the intent.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So if you would identify yourself for the record and. The Representative Seaton just stated what I would have said is please explain the differences in the CS and the old version.
Okay, well, good morning. For the record, I'm Jana Dogan. I'm committee aide for House Education, and I work for Representative Keller also. Today, before us, we have a new CS for House Bill 102, the Residential Psychiatric Treatment Center. We have made a few minor changes in here. On page 1, or page 2, line 20, we just changed the word from may to shall. Page 2, line 23, basically eliminated the school board because it's going to be a proposed contract. And then on page 4, line 19, it went from 1 year to 3 years because this is a pilot program, and basically those are the changes that we have made to this bill. I'd also like to have Evelyn also come up to the table in case we have any questions for her.
Sure.
She would be willing to answer them, We're here to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Right. So Evelyn, if you would identify yourself for the record and confirm that she covered the changes in the CS, please.
Good morning, Chairman Keller and House Education. My name is Evelyn Alsop. I'm the Director of Education for North Star Behavioral Health, and I do believe Ms. Ogden has gone through the changes in this working CS, yes.
Okay, and that's as far as we're going on to see it and tell their questions. So, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm showing my confusion here among the bills. Does the current CS, did that answer the questions that were brought up in the late legal memo about the, you know, single site, 40,000 students or more? And was that on the previous a previous version and is no longer a problem, or is that?
I can answer that. There was an anticipated amendment that we don't expect to have that was addressed to.
Okay.
So, yeah. Okay. So with that, we have the new CS in front of us, and it's up for, did you want to add more, Evelyn, as far as describing what the CS does, or otherwise we can go to comments, or to public testimony. We have public testimony.
Chairman Keller, I believe we can move forward.
Okay, great. Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, the trying to refresh my memory, the change on page 2, line 20, where it says the school board shall enter into a contract that provides payments. So this is a mandate on individual school boards. If there is a license provider, then they must enter into a contract with that license provider to take over those services. Is that correct, and is that the way it currently reads?
Evelyn, or...
Through the chair to Representative Seaton. By changing that word from may to shall, that gives us the opportunity to actually go into an appeal process. If we put may, if the word may is in that, then it would not allow us to go into an appeal process if needed.
Okay, so with that, we can come back to it in discussion of the bill, but I want to get the public testimony. So
thank you.
Okay, thanks. So we're going to start out here with Kayla Nielsen, as a parent, I guess, from Eagle River. If you would identify yourself and give us your testimony on House Bill 102.
Hi there. Yes, my name is Kayla Nielsen. I'm currently employed as an educator as well as holding a bachelor's degree in business administration. I've been a single mother of four since my children were 2, 4, 6, and 8 years old. I have a son who's been enrolled in the Anchorage School District since kindergarten. Keg and my son received his first neuropsychological evaluation at the age of 8. At this time, he was diagnosed with reading, math, written expression disorder, attention deficit disorder, mixed receptive expressive disorder, developmental coordination disorder, anxiety disorder, and mood disorder. Since that time, Kagan has been in and out of acute and residential treatment. At the age of 9, he spent 1 month in North Star Hospital and received another neuropsychological evaluation and was diagnosed with Asperger's disorder, attention deficit disorder, probable bipolar disorder, and cognitive disorder not otherwise specified. Around this time, he received his first IEP for services. I took him to a neurologist, had a sleep study done, and found he was waking every 2 minutes, had his tonsils and adenoids removed, took him to speech and occupational therapy outside of school as these services were denied at his residential school, even though his neuropsych reports specified these were needs. From the age of 11 to 13, he lived with his father, and they moved around. At the age of 13, while in his 8th grade year as an Anchorage School District student, he spent 3 weeks at the Providence Crisis Recovery Center after writing notes about threatening to commit suicide.
Excuse me.
After his return, he was now behind in school. Kagan's freshman year of high school with the Anchorage School District started off well, with him attending almost every day. During the middle of September, he was in a fight after being bullied and trying to walk away. I appealed the suspension due to his mental health issues and was denied. He missed 9 days of school, putting him further behind in his classes. When he went back to class, he was told he would have to get notes from classmates to catch up on work. He struggled again with school and his grades dropped. In the beginning of October, I had a meeting with the teachers and the administrator from his high school and shared all of his background with treatments, mental health issues, and IEP needs. In the middle of November, I emailed his school counselor, who was in charge of all the students with IEPs, and asked if we could meet to discuss some options for Kagan, as he was now failing all his classes. Her response was that he did not need any modifications or accommodations and asked if I had thought about having him see a therapist. I could not believe that she had no idea the struggles he was having and not willing to meet with me. I cannot put into words how I felt at that moment. After all the things I've tried to do to help my son with his mental health issues while also trying to communicate the best I can with the school, working two jobs and raising other kids as a single mom, I felt like it was a slap in the face. This counselor had no idea about my son's needs or background, even though I'd shared all of it with the school in early October. At the end of November, he spent another month at North Star Hospital and then entered into North Star's Palmer Residential Treatment Center and was enrolled in the Mat-Su School District. During this time, one of his main diagnoses was bipolar disorder. Due to not being on the right medication, he was then sent back to North Star, to the main North Star Hospital, and back to Anchorage School District for 1 month in the end of January. After his mental illness and bipolar was stabilized, he returned to the Palmer Residential Treatment Center and was re-enrolled with the Mat-Su School District for 9 months. While in the Palmer Residential Treatment Center, the only classes he could take were APEX classes entirely taught online. Kagan struggled to be able to learn in that way and became frustrated, even refusing to attend classes sometimes. Even after meeting with the Mat-Su School District teacher, he still was not given modifications to do his work with book and paper and pencil. His close and family therapy sessions were, "I'm stupid, there's no reason for me to go to school. I don't understand what I'm reading on a computer. I'm already behind, so what's the point?" After being discharged from Palmer in October of this first year, he re-enrolled with the Anchorage School District to finish his first semester of his sophomore year. While meeting with the school counselor, a different one, there was trouble getting the paperwork she needed from all the different facilities and school districts and aligning the classes he had taken with the Mat-Su School District with what was available in the Anchorage School District. I was told he was about a half a year behind in credits, even though he took classes while in residential treatment. He was so frustrated at being behind in school and given few classes that were suited to his needs, Kagan started to refuse to go to school. Now keep in mind, this is now a 15-year-old and almost 6 feet tall. He stopped taking his meds and went into a manic state. For those of you who are unaware of a manic state of bipolar, it's like feeling high and invincible. He ended up doing something really stupid and got into legal trouble. He told his therapist that he had tried to kill himself by overdosing on aspirin and ibuprofen up to 6 times. He spent 1 week at Providence Discovery Unit and then 3 weeks back at North Star Hospital. This is just a kid who started out wanting to attend high school to a student who now wants to drop out as he feels he's so far behind. There is no hope. What I really needed in this process was someone who could have helped with transitions from one program to another, someone who knew the whole situation and understands how the system works and is removed from the emotions involved while trying to help your child who is receiving treatment for a serious illness. While the school district does, Anchor School District does say they have a system in place to manage kids in treatment, the truth is this did not happen with my son. To my knowledge, no one from ASD contacted the treatment center during any of his stays in the last 2 years. The first time this past fall after his discharge from Palmer Residential Center, I heard from his head of special education at his high school was November 11th of 2015. This is 2 weeks after his re-enrollment. The next time I was contacted was January 28th of 2016, wondering why Kagan hadn't attended school this spring. I told her he was back in North Star after trying to commit suicide and heard nothing back. The first time I've heard of special schools department with the Anchorage School District was this past January, while trying to enroll Kagan back into a different high school after his last acute treatment at North Star Hospital, hoping that there would be more support. It took a full week to enroll him, which is good and bad. The good news, after 8 years, I finally heard of special schools department with the Anchorage School District and was able to talk to the head of that department and the head of special education department at his new high school, and they really, really wanted to get all the information so they could get back on track. The bad, it took one full week of him sitting at home waiting to attend school and now missing a full week of school, but also off his regular schedule of having to get up. I was told he was now one full year behind in his education. The Saturday after he was finally re-enrolled in school, he was taken by ambulance to Providence Hospital for another overdose. Fortunately, he is doing a little better now, but it is a huge struggle to get him to go to school as he does not see the point anymore. The treatment centers needs the support from all the school districts involved in order to best meet the needs of the students they are treating. While my son was enrolled in Mapsue and Anchor School Districts, during his stays, there was IEP goals were not being met. I cannot express to you how much my other children have suffered through this entire process. Thankfully, they do not suffer from mental health issues. There is no way for kids who are struggling and trying to get better mentally that they can be managed by one school district, as they are often bounced around to different school districts while getting treatment. Having a case manager from the residential center would have been one point of contact for Kega's educational needs, to communicate with the different school districts, to choose classes that will align with classes at his residential school, and keep up with his IEP goals. I would like to think I'm a pretty well-educated person, as well being a highly qualified educator for 9 years here in Alaska, but I still don't really understand how this system as stands is supposed to work. As a parent, I was trying my best to help get him treatment, go to treatment appointments, keep track of medical bills, try to keep a job, and raise three other kids on my own. It has been a massive struggle to keep up with his educational needs. Please support House Bill 102 so another family has to struggle with the aftermath of finally getting your kiddo in the right frame of mind to learn, and then find out they're now so far behind that they have a whole new struggle ahead. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Kayla, for calling in and testifying. It's a painful memories, obviously, and but they'll help us do the right thing. Thank you. Just for the record, Representative Vasquez has joined us some time ago, at least 10 minutes ago, and I just want to make the committee aware that online we have available for questioning Paul Ortner from the Division of Behavioral Health, and John Regitano, the Executive Director of Family-Centered Services of Alaska in Fairbanks. With that, we're going to go to the next testifier, Ed Graff, Anchorage School District.
Morning. Through the Chair, Representative Keller, I would like to add my testimony to the discussion today about HB 102 on residential psychiatric treatment center funding based on the latest work draft version F. My name is Ed Graff. I'm the Anchorage School District Superintendent. I want to thank you for the opportunity to provide public testimony on behalf of the Anchorage School District this morning. We also submitted written testimony to the committee yesterday, so hopefully you've received that written testimony as well for the public record. The Anchorage School District agrees with most of the legislative findings set forth in Section 1 of this bill. Students admitted to residential treatment facilities are entitled to educational services, and those services should not be compromised by virtue of the fact that a student needs psychiatric treatment. Where ASD disagrees is with the premise that a treatment center is able to provide more effective educational services to a student than a school district can provide. We disagree that there is a demonstrated need to provide uniform requirements to allow school boards to enter into contracts for treatment centers to provide educational services. School districts exist to meet the educational needs of students. That is their primary role. ASD is unaware of any statistics or anecdotal information supporting the premise that psychiatric treatment centers are more able to provide educational services to students than the public school district. ASD believes that a strong working relationship with these treatment centers is critical so that the corresponding needs of students for education and treatment can be accomplished. ASD also believes that this bill is not premised upon a need of students, but rather upon a desire of certain private treatment centers to take over educational services at public expense. For this reason and others, we do not support HB 102. The Anchorage School District has several psychiatric treatment facilities within its geographical boundaries, and we enjoy strong partnerships with them, such as Providence and Alaska Psychiatric Institute and others. Under current law, ASD is obligated to and does serve all students who are admitted to these treatment facilities, regardless of whether they are ASD students or students from other Alaska school districts. For decades, ASD has met the general education and special education needs of Alaskan students in need of residential psychiatric treatment and intends to continue doing so. ASD provides direct instructional support to students through qualified teachers, administrators, and support personnel. HB 102 has been compared to charter school laws. Charter schools are public schools. They are not private treatment centers. Additionally, unlike the process set forth in charter school law, this bill circumvents school board's authority and discretion in determining the need for educational programs and approving or denying a charter school contract. HB 102 removes all discretion from school boards local authority because it requires a school district to execute a contract so long as the contract meets the requirements of the law. ASD believes that HB 102 is unconstitutional. Article 7 of the Alaskan Constitution prohibits the expenditure of public funds for the direct benefit of a private educational institution. The Alaska Supreme Court has stated that the direct benefit prohibition involves government aid to education conducted outside the public schools. HB 102 establishes a system of education to be provided by a private organization, which is clearly prohibited. The fact that the private entities at issue also provide treatment services does not mean that the educational services they provide can be supported with public funds. The Alaska Supreme Court has also found that even indirect support of private schools violates Alaska's constitutional prohibition of using public funds for private education. Finally, the Anchorage School District believes the appeal process provided for in HB 102 is inappropriate. The proposed law provides a private vendor with a statutory right to appeal the district's decision to the commissioner and the State Board of Education. No other private vendor has afforded this type of appeal in Alaska's system of public education. This represents yet another example of how public funds will be expended to support private institutions. So, once again, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak on HB 102. The Anchorage School District has submitted written comments containing further detail, and we urge members not to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in, Ed. See no questions at this time. We will consider the points you bring up as we discuss the bill as it comes up. John Regitano.
Yes, I'm online.
Oh, that's I'm sorry. You're there for questions.
I'm just here for questions.
Thank you. Kathy Wassman, Fairbanks, North Star Borough.
Hi. My name is Kathy Wassman. I'm the Executive Director of Special Education for the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. And I wanted to testify this morning because I definitely see some issues with House Bill 102 that are concerning. I think that one of the most important parts is that in the bill there is no mention of the inclusion of parents taking part in this development of the IEP when a student is either in the treatment center or comes into the treatment center without an IEP. And the lack of adherence to IDEA laws, I think, is what is most concerning to me. When a student enters into a school district, that school district becomes responsible for their IEP and educational needs. And therefore, for the North Star, it would be up to Anchorage to work on those educational and IEP needs. I think that when you don't work together, if those two entities don't work together, then what ends up happening is that there can be a lot of mistakes that can be made and litigation that could happen due to the fact that IEPs aren't followed correctly, and that ends up being the liability of the school district, not the entity. I think that the language in the bill regarding the paying for those services it doesn't really explain exactly how that payment is supposed to happen and where that money is supposed to come from. So if it acts like it comes from the district where the student was previously enrolled is kind of what it reads like to me. And according to IDEA, those funds wouldn't come from the district where he was previously enrolled. He would have to enroll in Anchorage. So they're saying that they're going to take either the intensive funding, if that's what the school district got for that student, or the student-based allocation for either a regular education student or a student on an IEP. Well, it could very well be if that student was enrolled in, say, in Palmer or in, in Mat-2 when they got that in October when the funds were determined, and then that student moves in November to Fairbanks and then in December goes to North Star, who's charged for the funds? How does that payment happen? Most school districts aren't set up automatically with a system in place to even make those payments. So here we incur a whole nother cost to develop a system in order to make those payments. So that in itself, it definitely is an issue. The other thing that I wanted to testify about is, although I completely and totally understand about the fact that students can fall behind educationally when they are in residential treatment, I have although I'm testifying as the director, I also have a daughter who has been in treatment, and I understand completely the fact that your child falls behind a little bit in school. And I think that one of the most important things about a student with an IEP is that a student has to be served according to IDEA, according to the needs of the student, which is determined by an evaluation that is done. And in the evaluation summary, the needs are prioritized. So a student who possibly just has a learning disability might be reading and math are the priority for that student. And you may have a student with some mental health issues that also have like social emotional types of issues. But sometimes those are episodic, and they go to North Star because they have a learning disability. They don't typically have mental health issues. However, a divorce in a family or something that happens, a situational issue where a student needs has suicidal ideation or other things come up for that student. Well, I think that it's really important that a team determine now what are the needs of that student, and should we work on the mental health issues first so that those students can learn coping skills, strategies in order to help them with their school needs and their educational needs. So I think that's another issue that really needs to be worked out through a collaboration between a school district and the facility. However, it is the responsibility of the school district to make sure that those things are happening.
Thank you, Kathy, for your testimony. I appreciate you taking the time to call in. Posey Boggs, identify yourself and who you are affiliated with, and give us your testimony, please.
Good morning. My name's Posey Boggs, and thank you. But I was planning on testifying on HB 156, so would you like me to just stay on hold?
They will be moving to House Bill 156 next. So, thank you for being there.
Thank you.
Okay, so with that, we're going to close public testimony and bring the CS before the committee for discussion and questions. I will ask Evelyn and my staff to stay there, but I would ask the committee to not restrain, if you can, yourself from debate with them, but just ask questions to make sure that we have the information we need to make our decisions. Representative Vasquez.
Good morning. Ms. Alsop, I would like to know, walk us through the process of a student having an IEP and how that would be dealt with. And for the record, IEP, and for the record, Individual Educational Plan.
Through the chair to Representative Vasquez. Thank you for that question. Yes, a student that would come into our facility, we would be hiring all certificated teachers with an Alaska certification, and we would be hiring an administrator that holds a special education administrator certificate. So the kids would come into our facility. If they had an IEP, that IEP would immediately be looked at. We would begin that process immediately because there is a 10-day change of placement law with services. We would be working closely with the Anchorage School District, so we would notify parents. Parents would come in. We would notify parents. There's a meeting coming up. We would notify the person that the Anchorage School District has designated as an administrative oversight for us. We would be notifying them also about that IEP team meeting that is going to take place. And then once that IEP team meeting takes place with everybody that's involved, the parent, the guardian, any providers that are involved, the school district, then we would sit down, we'd take a look at any modifications, any accommodations we needed to do, and work on that child's goals.
Just to follow up on that one, that means the definition of an IEP is that a parent is involved in the making of the individual education plan.
Yes, Chairman Keller, a parent would absolutely have to be involved in any sort of decision that is made with an IEP.
Thank you. Representative Colbert.
Yeah, follow up on this issue. So under federal law, IDEA, it is responsibility of the school district where a private school is located to provide special education services to students enrolled. Where's the link between this is the responsibility of the local school districts being transferred to another entity to provide those services? And are those services provided under an IEP developed by the district, the center? How are we going to reconcile the district's responsibilities under IDEA and transferring of the student responsibility to the North Star institutions?
Representative Colbert, I appreciate the fact that you addressed that question to Evelyn and the staff, but I would rather, with your permission, let that be a question to the committee. It's our determination whether it's constitutional or not, and how it ties in with IED. We'll give opportunity for her to respond as we wish, but remember, this is a committee time, and we're not. Did you have a response?
Through the chair to Representative Colbert, the way that the bill is written and the intent of the bill is we would be working closely with the district, and there would be administrative oversight with the district. We would work collegially with the district to develop that IEP. So the district would be totally involved, as would the parents or guardians or any other agency that's involved with that child that the parents have requested in that IEP per IDEA law.
Okay, it's just been my experience, Mr. Chairman, that
follow up, Representative.
To comment on this issue, it's a highly litigious area of these situations where parents don't feel that their children are receiving the mandates of federal law by a district. I'm concerned that we not get in the middle of, if a parent is dissatisfied with either party, then the parent could litigate that the district is abrogating their responsibility on oversight under this IDEA and the IEP and the responsibilities that they have. Because having been involved in settling a lot of these situations, I'm stating that for the record that I have some serious concerns about opening the door for future conflict, and then the district would be responsible to defend their actions under the federal requirements of providing services to the disabled and special needs. Thank you.
Thank you for putting it on the record, and it's up for discussion. I would like to point out that when the concept of providing and education is guided by our Constitution. That's why I threw that in there. And our Constitution specifies that there's a prohibition if it's a direct benefit, and it's to an educational institution. I think neither one of those necessarily apply in this case at all, and that the district can contract with other entities to help provide the education it needs and the services that it needs, just for discussion. But that's my understanding, and yours may be different. And your point is well taken, Representative Colbert, that this is what I want to say. It causes litigation and concern, and I certainly appreciate you and you know, value that statement, and often that's the case with what we do around here. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been some time since we members of the committee toured the North Star Behavioral Health Facility in Anchorage, and I know there have been there has been attempt on both sides of the issue to improve the quality of the services that the students at North Star are getting from the Anchorage School District, and I would like an update from both North Star and the Anchorage School District on where they are in this process and what has changed, if anything, since last year when we toured the facility. Mr. Chair, if that's all right with you.
Representative Drummond, I would really prefer that we act on this bill today. And would you be willing to just take the testimony of the North Star here, or would you rather also...
Mr. Chair, the bill that we are looking to pass out of committee affects seriously the school district, the Anchorage School District in particular, and I would like feedback from both North Star and the Anchorage School District, since the superintendent is on the line, as to whether things have improved and whether this bill is still necessary. I know it's still necessary on behalf of the North Star folks, but I would like to hear the Anchorage School District's perspective as well.
Okay, I'll honor your request. Evelyn?
Through the chair to Representative Drummond. As we started the school year, with after last session, and I think we did a report before we had a little short recess there. But we started the school year. There was an increase in the allocated time for students, and we were very thankful for the increase in the allocated time. There was an increase in teachers, and we were very thankful for the increase in teachers. There was an administrator that was actually hired to actually oversee the special schools department, and we were very thankful for that because that gave an added amount of oversight. However, I do believe that when the subcommittee came in to tour, they realized very quickly that there were still several areas of high concern and high priority needs that had not been met, and one of those areas was absolutely that children were not being able to get online, nor did they have the computers necessary to be able to access their online education. There was no clear transitions going on between the school and going back to their resident school or their neighborhood school. There was no clear plan as to how that oversight was happening with the administrators on site. There was a counselor on site, however, transcripts were not being aligned. And still today, transcripts are not being aligned between schools, other school districts, and the Anchorage School District when a child is studying in our facility. We still have several areas of high priority needs that are still lingering out there. Although the district has put forth a good faith effort to try to meet those needs, they are still struggling to be able to meet those needs in a way that makes it possible for kids to be able to articulate forward, as you heard in the parent testimony earlier. It is our belief and our feeling that if we are allowed to be able to integrate mental health with education, we can provide a system that will help that child be able to move forward and go back into their neighborhood residential school and be on the same track with their like peers. And we also do believe that we have the ability to be able to provide a much clearer transitional process to help those neighborhood schools.
Just limit your response to the question, which is, has the status changed in Anchorage? That's the gist of the question. Sorry,
Chairman. So yes, there has been some change, but yes, we still have several areas of priority need that I addressed.
Thank you. We'll go to Ed Graff. I hope you're still online. In debate, one of the worst kind of questions that you can get, have you stopped beating your wife, that kind of thing, So have things improved in the Anchorage School District?
To the chair, thank you for both the analogy and the opportunity here. In an effort to provide services and support in treatment at North Star Behavioral Health System in Anchorage, we've had ongoing conversations with the local education director and the vice president of specialty education of United Health Services of Delaware. And through those conversations, we've identified and actually they've resulted in several improvements, which I want to highlight. One is that we've updated registration process with current ASD enrollment packets. We've enhanced our communications with parents of students in the treatment center, and they're including personal calls by our transitional counselor to ensure that they have appropriate course placement, that their IEP goals are addressed, and that accurate contact information is being shared. We've also facilitated communication with parents or guardians and receiving schools to discuss the transition plans upon the student's discharge. We scheduled weekly meetings between our counselors, the ASD counselor, and the North Star Behavioral Health clinicians. We've purchased and installed technology upgrades for the facility, the North Star Behavioral Health Systems facility, which includes 92 new computers, 10 radio controllers, complete reinstallation of the Anchorage School District wireless network. We've also increased staffing. Sue Dory has recently been named as principal upon the passing of Jerry Cucci, who is identified as the principal of special schools in July. Ms. Doherty has 30 years of experience in special education as a resource teacher, a transition specialist, department chair, supervisor of special education, and an administrator. And most recently, she was at a comprehensive high school as an assistant principal, where she transitioned students from residential treatment facilities back to their neighborhood schools program. So she has an extensive amount of experience in special education and working with this type of population. We also increased our transition counselor position from a half-time to a full-time position, and we increased teacher positions from 6 full-time equivalents to 10 full-time equivalents. We created a special schools office over here in our education center as a home base for special schools principal and the non-teaching staff. We schedule and conduct monthly staff meetings with special schools personnel. We conducted daily visits to North Star Behavioral Health System by the principal, counselor, or special education department chair. We've increased communications between special schools principal and the hospital staff. We established weekly meetings between the education director and the special schools principal. We've ensured that all of our teachers are highly qualified and relevant in the core areas of instruction. We've increased our instructional day for acute care students from a half day to full day program at the request of the director. Established regular progress meetings with staff, Mike Lyons and Evelyn Elsa, and ASD staff, Mike Henry, the executive director for secondary education, and Sue Doherty, the special schools principal. We've scheduled quarterly progress meetings with staff, Mike Lyons and Evelyn Elsup, as well as having ASD staff present, Mike Graham, the chief academic officer, Linda Carlson, the assistant superintendent for instructional support, Mike Henry, the executive director for secondary education, and Sue Doherty, the special schools principal. We've also addressed reported staff shortages, which were experienced by North Star Behavioral Health System, that resulted in a relocation of classrooms and increased class sizes without prior notice on any given day, again, by remaining flexible and committed to serving our students. So these are some of the things that have taken place over the last several months. And again, we remain committed to working with any of our partners for the betterment of our students.
Thank you, Ed. And again, we will close public testimony and the bill's for the committee. What is the, you can have comments, but what is the will of the committee as far as the language and that kind of thing? Representative Talrico?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer, I know it's chicken scratched up, but I'd like to offer amendment number one.
Okay. We'll call it amendment number one. I'll object for purpose of discussion. Did I understand this is a conceptual amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, please describe it.
Okay, and if I could I ask my staff member, Joshua Banks, to come up and give you a description? He's worked closely with these folks.
Joshua, if you would identify yourself for the record and describe, we have a copy of the conceptual amendment in front of us, but if you would read it, you know, so that we have on the record, you know, what it is, and it is a conceptual amendment, so go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Joshua Banks, staff to Representative Talrico, and just to clarify, Mr. Chair, is this S.1? The amendment, S.1?
We will call it, for purposes of the committee, Joshua, amendment number one. The document that you had and then changed here, we've changed a little bit, is labeled S.1.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the amendment was based on some concerns from family-centered services in Fairbanks, and they support the standards set in the bill, but the process and the appeal process that is detailed throughout the bill, they thought it was somewhat cumbersome, and they requested this amendment. The original S.1 had some potential constitutional problems setting different standards for school districts that have their contract made before January 1st. So the conceptual amendment to the amendment states that proposed contract based on provisions of C in the original bill, and that states the 21 different subsections, the 21 different standards, and if the contract is based on those provisions set in House Bill 102, and it's made, and the contract is completed before January 1st, then the school district and the residential psychiatric treatment center won't have to deal with the rest of the process, submit it to the school board and appealing it to the state Board of Education.
Representative Talrico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I might add to that, one of the concerns I think that really comes up is there are several school districts that already have working agreements and contracts in place and have had for some time with the treatment centers. And I think their biggest fear was that they would be, if we don't have a provision in this bill for them to be able to contract and continue that relationship, then they will actually have to get outside of the current system that they operate in order to kind of do a whole redo on the entire process. And they already have this working relationship. I know the North Star Borough does that, as well as I do believe that here in Juneau that they've been able to accomplish that as well. And we kind of wanted to make sure that they have the ability to continue forward with that working relationship that they already have. Seems appropriate since they've really got this well established within their school district.
Okay. What I'm going to do is remove my objection to the amendment and ask you not ask for that no one further objects unless you object to the concept. And then we'll go in, because S1 is what's in front of us. And S1, you have to disregard all the chicken scratch, you know, and just take the text. And then we'll go in and we'll specifically amend, even though it's a conceptual amendment, that will clarify on the record what we're doing. So I remove my objection, and S1, amendment 1, labeled S1, passes, and then now it's back before the committee, and is there amendments to the amendment that need to be made? Representative Vasquez.
Mr. Chairman, just a point of clarification for Representative Tallarico. So in essence, the proposed amendment was simply remove the word shall and replace it with may, and basically set forth the timeline that the parties enter into agreement by January 1st, immediately preceding the first school year for which the residential psychiatric treatment center seeking funding. Is that correct? I just want to clarify exactly what the amendment does.
Through the chair, Representative Vasquez, that's correct, yeah. And it also just, really what it does is it makes a solid provision in there for those people that have the ability to make that agreement and make that contract continue on.
Voluntarily, right?
Yeah. An agreement between the center and the school district.
Is there amendments to the amendment?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Vasquez.
I would like to know I'd like to know how the parties feel about that amendment. Specifically, Ms. Alsup and even Mr. Grapp.
Evelyn, if you would identify yourself for the record.
My name is Evelyn Alsup. I am the Director of Education for North Star Behavioral Health. Through the chair to Representative Vasquez, we have no objection to the amendment as long as the dates are the dates that have been proposed and the sunset date has been lengthened on the end of that amendment, so because this is a pilot project with the sunset closure.
Just a clarification then, changing the shall to may is not something that you think is advisable. And I want to point out that that's part of the chicken scratch here, that we have eliminated that. So I will go ahead and make some amendments to the amendment, and then we'll discuss it. We'll try that route. Okay. Page 7, on page 1 of the bill here, we're going on to line 8. And after the word contract, insert the words with the provision in C.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Vasquez.
Are we referring to the amendment and not the bill?
Tactic and it is. I was wondering the same thing. What is C? Where are we going here? This is S1, and the intent of the rescission, the reason I'm doing this is that we're going to pull back. The chair learns another lesson. Amendments on the fly are never a good idea, but we're going to take one more bite of this apple. We're going to go for it Friday. There will be a vote on Friday on this bill, and we'll try to get a CS that can be described to you well on Friday. So is there objection to my amendment or my motion to rescind our action on S.1, the conceptual amendment? Seeing no objection. So again, for clarification and for the recorder, just to make sure we have this on the record correctly, what we have before us, what I'm going to set aside here, is a CS for House Bill number 102, Education, version 29LS0519 Sierra. We'll set the bill aside until Friday. I thought I was off the record. I'm not. We're still going here. We'll move on here to my bill. HB 156. Again, this bill has been before the committee before. If you would, Representative Tallarico, would you move version Yankee as the working document?
I will, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I move committee substitute for House Bill number 156, Education, number 29 LS0566 / Y as the working document.
Y, Yankee. Okay, at ease. HB 156. What I'm going to do, as chair, typically I would pass the gavel to the vice chair, and I may do that if we get into debate, but I'm just going to go ahead and describe the differences between this and the previous CS, and the way I'm going to do it is just go through it section by section and give you a picture of the bill, and then we'll go from there. So the first section one of the bill is a amendment to 1403.120F, as in Foxtrot. This section of law is a DED report. This report is required to go to the governor and the public and to the legislature. It's a long-standing requirement that has been there. It's not something that's created in 156. The thing that we did in 156, the only thing we did, is on page 2, line 6. And that is that that it includes the designation by the for the state public school system as a whole. And to justify that change and to explain why it's significant, if you go back to 14.03.123, which is not in the bill, but I passed copies out to you last time, it's in the that section of the bill, 14.03.123, is a requirement for the department, and that they have to assign a performance designations for the schools and the districts, and this has been in law all along. It also says, and to the public school system in accordance with F of the section. So it's been there as a requirement for school district accountability. So all that was to say that the purpose of section one is simply to get a designation in the report for our whole public statewide school system. It's consistent with what is there and hopefully what is being done. And it also, that ties with that change on page 2, lines 5 and 6 also pertains to, on page 2, if you look down there, on 17, 18, and 19. A comparison, this is the standard, okay, by which this designation for the public school system ought to be given. A comparison of the public school system to the public schools in other states include a comparison of student participation in standards-based assessments and student performance on the assessments. Just by way of explanation, this is the state board sets up the process for making these designations, and this just says we want to compare our students in the state of Alaska with other states based on performance, and that just includes that part. So then on the back up to lines 9 and 10, all that does is it changes, it makes it plural, designations rather than singular, and to the district and to the state public school system, so it's clear what the designations are for. Then down on line 26, and again, this is in 1403.123, which is your accountability section of law. It deletes the phrase "and with federal law" to the extent necessary to conform to federal law. There's nothing really wrong with that language, probably because that is the intent of the district and the legislature to conform with federal law, but I'll explain it. It's actually conformative to a change that we made later in the bill that is rather significant, what we'll get to. So you can just kind of put your thumb in that when I come back. Let's see. Section 4, again, it's a change The improvement plan, I'm looking at line three here. Page three, I should say, lines six through nine. This is a response to put in the law that, in the spirit of ESSA, the new federal law on education, and also in response to the pain that we have recently felt of getting assessments out there and having reactions from very significant sources. The improvement plan must, to the extent possible, include measures that increase local control of education and parental choice that do not require a direct increase in state federal funding for the school or district. So it's just a conceptual addition to the law. It doesn't, it does require a new element in the sense that if this law were, if HB 156 were to pass, we would be able to ask, okay, how did you include local input? How did you get input from the teachers in the classroom as far as whether these assessments were valuable or not? Section 5 of the bill is a little different. This is a part, again, a part of accountability that requirement that requires the state to establish a program of special recognition for the schools that receive a high performance designation. What this does is it includes, it changes it so that the recognition that we give is based on improvement, you know, so that we don't just get a standard and have a school district meeting it and then getting praise year after year after year after year that they are meeting the standard, but instead they're improving. There's always room for improvement. So it just kind of raises the bar a little bit on the recognition that we give for the high performance designation. And then on lines 18 and 19, it's hard for me overemphasize the importance I put on this, but it deletes the lines implement 20 U.S.C. 6301 to 7941 elementary, the ESSA Act of 1965, as amended, which would include ESSA. So the reason that I am deleting this language, there's several things, but most importantly, to implement is a very strong term, and it leaves the it directs the department to act here, and it kind of leaves the legislature out of it. And so we don't want to, interpretation of those pages of U.S. code is a very significant thing. So when we're setting policy in state education on assessment and accountability stuff, we want the local district involved in that process. We don't want somebody sitting in an office somewhere interpreting what the U.S. code is and then setting state policy without the proper vetting of the local community, local district, and the legislature. So I and again, there's two things on this that I want to point out. One is we've had testimony twice now from the Department of Education attorneys that taking this out is not a significant change or threat. They can confirm that or not if they changed their mind, but I don't think they have, because the understanding is that obviously we know where we stand with U.S. code, but we just want to be able to understand that we don't want to put in our language that they have to implement the federal code, even though they have to comply maybe with it. But it's a statement I think that's very, very important. Then down on lines 23 through 25, assessments must be selected with the input of teachers as school administrators and minimize disruption in the classroom. Again, just a requirement that we get input from the field, from the home district, from the teachers that are actually in there, and measuring the student improvement and by their actual performance. Then we go to 14 dot, this section 7 on page 4. 14.07.020 is a section of giving the duties out to the department. And what this includes is just some language that makes it clear that we expect or hope that the department is working with the University of Alaska to improve student achievement and prep courses and whatever. And also it goes line page 5, lines 18 through 20. Again, work with the various unions, labor unions, and businesses for the same purpose. And then the change on page 6 up there on the top of the page, line 5, is just that's referenced back to the inclusion of that we'll have to take into consideration the classroom teachers and the local district. I think that covers it. And is there any questions for me for clarification that I need to make on what we're doing? Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if it was intentional, but I think you skipped over page 2, lines 17 through 19, which addition I really like. You didn't describe that we'd be comparing ourselves to others.
Representative Drummond, actually I did make reference to it, but it was very confusing the way I did because I tied it up there with the change that I made on lines 5 and 6. But yes, it is a change to the accountability segment of law that says a comparison of the state public school system to the public schools in other states, including a comparison of student participation in standards-based assessments and student performance on the assessments. What I anticipate here is that the comparison would be made based on things like NAEP, the National Evaluation. The National Testing of Proficiency that we all pay attention to. But that would be rather than name them in the bill, that would be up to the state board to determine what criteria they use. And I would hope that our grade when we're comparing ourselves with other school systems would also include international, but that's where I ran into trouble. You got to tell what to base it on. We'll let them decide. Okay, I'm dying.
Right. Yes.
Representative Vasquez.
This dovetails to perhaps an amendment on page 2, the same page, line 3. And I'll read the line before. It refers to the summary of the information required in subsection 1. The summary must be prepared in a manner that allows school performance to be measured against established state. And I would propose that we should add and national education standards. It would be consistent with lines 17 through 19 on the same page.
Representative Vasquez, am I missing something? 17 through 19 does not say anything about international, right?
Right, but this is, no, I'm not talking about international. I'm simply stating
national,
that
okay.
National.
Okay.
It would be just consistent.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
To provide that.
Okay.
State and national.
When we get to that stage of the process, if you have an amendment, a conceptual amendment, I would consider it a friendly amendment. Representative Culver.
Do you have anything on opt-out of parents and testing in here? I'm looking for. I thought there was something in here.
Yeah.
You can tell. This is like a Monday morning all over for me. After the I missed the most important part of the bill. There's a new section that we need to discuss. Page 4, line 13 and following. You can tell, you get into it, sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees. But I see this as incredibly important. And if you have not read this section before, I would encourage you to do so now. It's a spirit of...
Section 4, not page 4, okay.
Section 4.
Okay.
Am I...
No, this doesn't seem to...
No, I'm talking about Section 8, Representative
Section 8.
Over page 6.
Page 6.
Line 13.
We're on board
my
now.
Brain is not connected to my tongue.
Page 6, line...
A new section.
So, as the sponsor of the bill, I will go ahead and continue my explanation there, and then you can ask me questions if you like, and then we'll go for debate. Okay, so what this does, notwithstanding the existing laws that we have out there for assessment and for performance. Notwithstanding of that, we're saying, hey, the department may not require a school district or a school administrator a statewide standards-based assessment after July 1st, 2017. What it does is it builds in a time frame when tests are no longer required. So it isn't opt-out, Representative Culver. What it is just saying, hey, we need a timeout here. We've had a change in the federal law, ESSA, from NCLB to ESSA, and we have a everybody is scrambling in the state to try to get the tests out, and this is just saying, hey, we're going to stop. And what it does is it assumes that our Commissioner of Education is going to be negotiating and discussing and working hard with the federal government to make sure we don't lose our federal funding. That's the obvious unspoken question here. If we say we're not giving these tests, then of course, there has to be some pretty good guidelines on that, because they come back. I have firsthand proof of this. If you want, they come back every time and send you a letter and say, you're putting your federal money at risk here. You know, and we have the ability to take it all or part of it or whatever. But I think that it's reasonable to ask for this time frame. For one thing, I was told by the California College Board when they were here that California has done this and was able to negotiate their way through it with the federal government. And it, like, again, it puts the onus on the on our new commissioner and to do in the spirit of the law to negotiate with the federal government. I think it gives him or her a tool negotiate with the federal government regarding the requirements that are placed on us on the assessment and accountability segments that we have in the state. In my walking through Title 14 many, many times, I think there's nobody that would argue with me that it is something that has been added on, tacked on, whatever, in this area of accountability and assessments over time, and it is pretty confusing, and this is basically calling for a review for the state board to go back and come back with a plan no later than 2020 to put in for assessment and for accountability so that we can just kind of review Title 14 in the context of those requirements. We have a little bit of, this is an aside and not really a description of the bill, but in working with the federal government, we do have somebody in Senator Murkowski's office that is very, very familiar with our reporting requirements and our assessment requirements, because she was here when all this was put together, and now she's in D.C. So, with that, I'm going to just take a brief at ease and let everybody digest Section 8 a little bit, and then we'll go to record. Are there further clarifications on the description of the bill? I thought I would sneak that one by, you know. And I, oh, well.
Sure.
So, Ms.
Yeah, I'm, Chair, I'm wondering if you've had the opportunity to get a legal opinion from the legal department on whether or not this is going to put us at risk with any federal.
Representative Sponholz, I have in an earlier version, I've been in constant contact with them. Mm-hmm. They said the same thing that the feds do. We may be putting the federal money at risk, mm-hmm. but there's no question of constitutionality or anything. It just that is a concern that they felt obligated to point out on the previous version. I would assume that still stands.
Mm-hmm.
But I did, that language that is there before you was drafted by our legal services.
Right.
I did not draft it. So.
Right.
In seeing no other questions, I'm going to go to, I think I'll go to the department first. Posey Boggs is online. We have only one testifier off net, but we'll go to the department first. And while you're coming, Commissioner McCauley, I have no need to pass this bill today. I will have kind of an urgent need to move it on Friday. What I mean is, for my own personal bias, you know, I would really like to see this thing up and running so it's in the communication. So please, we'll set the bill aside today. Go ahead, Commissioner, identify yourself and give us your testimony.
Susan McCauley, Interim Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. Chair Keller, are there specific sections that you wish me to respond to, or would you like me to give you my impressions in general?
In general, and if you have specific sections that you have suggestion or real concern with, we want to work with you, so we want that on the record now, please.
Thank you. With regard to page 2, lines 17 through 19, adding language that would require a comparison of the state public school system to public schools in other states, including a comparison of student participation in standards-based assessments and student performance on the assessments. I want to give this a bit more thought, but our ability to do that would have to leverage one of two things. It would have to leverage the assessment results given both by Alaska and other states taking the same assessment, or we would have to in some way determine other factors that constitute sufficient comparison of our state public school system with that of other states, such as graduation rate. Right now, our current situation is that we have a unique to Alaska assessment. It was a custom-designed assessment for Alaska. No other states take the identical assessment. And so, and as has been discussed, we are moving in the direction of looking for an assessment to replace the Alaska Measures of Progress, or AMP. But again, if we were in the future to, for a variety of reasons, determine that we again want a unique to Alaska assessment, we would not have assessment results to compare with other states. This language would minimally suggest the consideration of an assessment that is taken by other states so that those results can be compared. But other than the National Assessment of Educational Progress, NAEP, there is no assessment that is given by all states. States are free to choose their own assessments, and some states select assessments given by other states, and some do what we did, and they select an Alaska-specific assessment. Let me just read this one more time. It says include a comparison of student participation in standards-based assessment and student performance on the assessments. I need to give this a bit more thought and see if by default this would require us to give an assessment that is also given by other states. And if it does, there is not going to be a single assessment other than NAEP that is given by all of the states where we would have comparison to everybody else. So that's the first area.
Could I? I'm trying to word this as a question because it's not fair. Maybe I should give the gavel to you.
Okay.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Keller.
Yeah, sponsor of the bill. The intent is to get a comparison, not to mandate a type of test for the state of Alaska. In the past, we have specified NAEP, and that has met resistance. And so the intent was to say general here, not to say that we have to give a test that is approved in all the other states. So I appreciate you pointing that out, and we may need to change that to or the and or something to make sure that misunderstanding doesn't, you know. Thank you.
Should I continue?
Please.
I'll
talk to the chair.
Yes. Before you proceed, for the record, you're using the acronym NAEP, N-A-E-P. Can you please, for the record, state what that stands for?
Mm-hmm. Through the Representative Vasquez, National Assessment of Educational Progress is sometimes referred to as the nation's assessment. It is the only assessment that is required to be given by the federal government to all states. We give it in two grades, as we are mandated. It is a sampling of students, not every student, and it in general. And when folks talk about Alaska's performance within the context of how we do as a state, they are almost always referencing NAEP results, the National Assessment of Educational Progress.
She has a question.
So, once you're done.
Okay. I have another question. Is it possible to administer that assessment to every child in the state?
Representative Vasquez, I don't believe so. I believe that the sampling methodology used for administration of NAEP is a prescribed and exclusive methodology.
Can you check on that?
I can confirm for certain.
Thank you. Any other questions right now? Representative Brumman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm scratching kind of deep here into my school board memory, which ended in 2003, but it's only, NAEP is only given to fourth graders and eighth graders?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, that's correct.
And if I continue,
yes.
And the NAEP test is only available for fourth graders and eighth graders. In other words, if we wanted to administer it to fifth graders and seventh graders, we couldn't do it because it doesn't exist.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, that's correct.
And just one more comment. I seem to recall that the Anchorage School District found this to be a very useful test. It's thorough. It's been used for a long time, and it was just showing that it's still required, and we're still using it, and we do use the results. We do use the results for it. I'm always a little frustrated though, because you give it to fourth graders, and then 4 years later, mm-hmm. those same fourth graders will be tested as eighth graders. But there's a long period of time between looking at the results. What did we do with these fourth graders? Mm-hmm. And by eighth grade, it may be too late to make changes. So it is a little bit frustrating, but I don't see how a state as small as Alaska, with our small population, could justify developing an equally good assessment. And we can see we got in trouble with the AMP, with doing our own. But I just wanted to say that the NAEP test is well regarded, and I think it's smart of us to continue doing it.
Thank you for your input.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Keller.
Thank you. Another clarification is that, in my mind as a sponsor, we're doing the work that I would anticipate the school board to do. What the law is that we get a comparison, and you know, if NAEP is the only option we have, I've been hearing about you're reading at grade level or not grade level since I was in school. So there's got to be standards out there, you know, that we can use. But again, I see this as work of the state board, not necessarily the committee. And in light of the fact that we're quickly running out of time, I would really appreciate it, Madam Chair, if we could get an overview of other areas of concern, so that if I have a chance to correct things that need to be corrected on Friday, you know, we'll be in a better position. So thank you.
You may proceed.
Thank you. Moving to page 6, section 8. What Representative Keller is speaking to is here with the date range during which we would not require a school or district to administer a statewide assessment is reflective of our current circumstances that I believe spoken to before, but that was some time ago. Our circumstances are that we are currently under contract with the Achievement and Assessment Institute to deliver and administer AMP. We indicated, former Commissioner Hanley indicated in February, that we would be seeking a new request for a proposal to replace the AMP assessment with something else. We are required currently by federal and state law to annually administer an assessment to all students in grades 3 through 8 and once in high school. The situation is that putting a new RFP out the door, though we are working on it daily, getting a response, getting responsive proposals, selecting a proposal, and moving toward having in place a new assessment for next spring is a pretty tall order. Even if the assessment is not custom, if it's more off the shelf, it is likely that there would have to be elements of it, even if they were small elements, customized for Alaska. We will want to weigh in or have some checks and balances on things like cultural bias and sensitivity of items, given Alaska's unique demographics. Those processes, to do something well, takes time, and our superintendents have been thus far quite clear that while they are certainly concerned about our continuing to meet our federal and state requirements, they want this to be done well, more than fast. If we can do both, well, great, then no problem. But if we have to pick one or the other, I think collectively, those of us in the educational community would pick, let's do this right. There's our challenge, doing it right and fast at the same time. There is, I think, importantly, though, an acknowledgement prior to, at the beginning, lines 16 and 17, let me just read it in its totality. Notwithstanding, beginning on line 15, notwithstanding those statutes or a provision of federal law to the contrary, the department may not. So I think that what would be beneficial is the ability to negotiate what are our requirements with the U.S. Department of Education. We are transitioning to a very different federal law with the Every Student Succeeds Act. So there's enormous transition happening in the field of public education nationally already. We are also transitioning within Alaska from what is our current assessment to whatever will be our new assessment. The idea is that the confluence of this might give us some room for negotiation in terms of what is minimally compliant for next spring. And that might look different than a ready-to-go, full-blown assessment, grades 3 through 8 and once in high school. That's where the negotiation room is beneficial. I would suggest, however, that it is unlikely, I'm not saying impossible, but I would say improbable, that the U.S. Department of Education would grant a two-year reprieve from administering a statewide assessment. I think it's also questionable whether we collectively would want 2 years without assessment data about how our students are doing. The tough time for us specifically is going to be a year from now. It's going to be next spring, because that would require, again, all of those conditions that I just said to happen, and that we have something quality that meets this with the satisfaction of education stakeholders, provides valuable data to them in the manner that they expect, and we would have that ready to roll a year from now. So the dates here, I think, we could discuss some potential adjustment there, both in terms of what I'm describing as the most difficult period, which is next spring, and that these dates address a period of 2 years. And my I've not talked with U.S. Department of Ed. I just we've not started that negotiation process. I think it's improbable that they would grant a two-year reprieve. And I have no, at this point, have no additional comments. I would certainly like to look at it between now and whenever it's heard next and see what other things come to the surface. But those are my initial responses.
Ms. Representative Colbert?
Well, I guess my concern is that if we rush to prepare an assessment, that we'll be back right where we are now. And so I do support some kind of a period in time in which we listen to the districts, we look at what ESSA means to us and how that will translate into the local control that's also in part of this legislation, that we're going to turn some of this statewide authority over to local school districts, and we don't know what that looks like yet. So I think there, a hiatus is appropriate, I do think that of what that time period looks like is certainly negotiable, but I don't see us getting ready with a new regime by next spring. I do think we need something that's has some nationally normed elements, not exactly cookie cutter, exact an existing assessment, but this is something maybe we're going to need a little bit some reflection on as we go through this process. But I think you've got the right elements in here, Mr. Chairman, of kind of reforming this assessment regime we have right now that isn't working. So that's all I have. Thank you. Oh, the only, if I may, Madam Chair, and on line 17, it says the department may not require a school district or school to administer a statewide standards-based assessment after July 1, 2017. I'm having a real hard time with the may. Maybe that be a shall. But I think this section, we've highlighted it with a flashlight, and maybe the chairman will have something, some additional analysis or tweaking on that.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Keller.
What I will do on that one is duck. I will talk to our legal services and let them describe the difference between may not and shall not, because I find myself confused by that very thing.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? We have someone on the line, Ms. Posey Boggs. Ms. Boggs?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. For the record, please spell your name.
Sure. My first name is Posey, P-O-S-I-E, and my last name is Boggs, B-O-G-G-S.
And Ms. Boggs, before you proceed, can you please state for the record any association you have?
I would be delighted to. You might not want to hear them. I'm involved with six different advocacy groups focused on reading. Would you like all of them or a representative couple?
Ms. Boggs, you are testifying on behalf of which organization today? Can you please state that on the record?
All right, excellent. Alaskans for Reading Proficiency.
If you want,
thank you.
You can find out if she can come back Friday.
Shall I begin?
Yes, Ms. Boggs, are you willing to proceed? Can you please proceed?
Sure, thank you. I would first simply like the Civics Education Task Force to know just a couple of details. The original and founding documents require a reading level between 12th grade and 18th grade reading level, which means college. And given that only 30% of Alaska students graduate high school, being able to read according to the general belief of the NAEP, they do test a group of 12th graders throughout the nation, and I don't expect Alaska's scores to be any better at 12th grade than the nation. I think we have a little bit of a problem, and I'd like that task force to just think about that as they proceed. Original documents are really, really very high reading level. Second, regarding HB 156, and it relates a little to HB 102 because you just heard from a mother about the effects of low reading proficiency on mental health. So going back onto HB 156, I'm very much in support of number 5, line 6 on page 2 about the methodology the state would use about matching a national test of rigor. I believe that this fact can be the most important driver that can move our dismal reading proficiency levels. And Representative Keller, I thank you very much for supporting the rigor of national standards, because Alaska can do this. I would further recommend that on page 3, line 23, there be a language in Instead of just saying, like, English language arts or language arts, I really believe that you must pull out reading proficiency as a unique and separate result. What the heck is reading English language arts anyway? That's the question that parents ask me all the time. But they understand, can my child read? One area of concern that I do have is on page 2, line 16, where it gives preference to measures of local control. And my main concern is that reading instruction is scientifically evidenced, but our teachers and their own educators, professors, do not have this knowledge about the research on reading instruction because it occurs outside of the education field. Most of the reading research does not occur in education. Many teachers and professors don't even know that this research exists. If we continue to leave reading instruction up to local control, this means that a school or a school district or a school board or can just choose to ignore the and discount the scientific evidence from over 35 National Institute of Health reading research centers that have been doing this for over 40 years. If we allow schools and districts and school boards to continue their current practices, Alaskan children are just doomed to ridiculously low reading proficiency levels. I would love the legislators to make a plan to uphold their responsibility to ensure our children are reading proficient, because we can do it based on the science. The last thing I wanted to comment on was Section 8. My master's is in educational diagnostics, and I believe taking a break to develop a really excellent standard-based assessment is a good idea. But in the meantime, during the break, there are some quick, nationally standardized and normed reading and math assessments that are inexpensive, and they can be group administered. And the reading one that I use all the time, it takes less than 8 minutes to give, so it's not a huge time burden. And that way the students would get very accurate reading proficiency scores so that parents would know during this transition time. Regarding the U.S. Department of Education and asking for this two-year break, a strategy in that ask could be that scientifically it would be quite interesting to the U.S. Department of Education to have one of these brief reading tests as a direct comparison to the NAEP. So there could be some strategy in getting a waiver for the couple of years. So that's all I had for today, and I thank you very much for taking my testimony today.
Thank you, Ms. Boggs. Any question? I will now hand over the gavel to Chairman Keller.
Thank you. And thank you, Posey. I took notes, and we'll follow through on this. With that, we're adjourned at 10 minutes after 10. Thank you.